This is a special edition. News 102.3 Tulsa's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic. And the home of the three big things you need to know. Listen on air, online at KRMG.com and on the KRMG app. The KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour starts now.
Good morning, 8 o'clock, 67 degrees in Tulsa. Sunshine this afternoon, 86 for a high. We tell you the three big things you need to know every 15 minutes on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter, number three. New this morning, country star Jason Aldean and his fans enjoyed a night of music and some tears at the BOK Center last night. It was Aldean's first concert since his performance in Las Vegas a week and a half ago and the slaughter of 58 of his fans by gunman Stephen Paddock. Number two. Happening today, President Trump halting payments to insurers under Obamacare. The Department of Health and Human Services says cost-sharing subsidies will cease immediately because they lack Congress authorization. Those subsidies help lower-income people pay for co-pays and deductibles. And number one, our top story on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter. It is a KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour on an autumn Friday, a day during which campuses across green country are awash in school colors. The football teams are wearing their jerseys to class. The cheerleaders are in uniforms, too. And the entire school anticipates what's coming later. Football Friday in Oklahoma, maybe the second most holy day of the week between September and December. Tonight, tens of thousands of Oklahomans will watch their sons and grandsons play a game that their dads and grandpas played. It's a tradition in Oklahoma.
It's not just a tradition. It has become a way of life. If you played and your son played and, you know, and your grandson plays, everybody goes to that game. And not just for football, for marching band and for all those dance teams, all of it.
It is now 15 years after it was first discovered. It's now that we're starting to talk about the way that high school players throw their bodies and their heads into the game and onto their opponent. And without a doubt, some of those players are going to suffer concussions even tonight, maybe even multiple concussions in one game. It used to be that you could chalk that up to being part of the game. You got your bell rung, you recovered, or at least you thought you recovered, and you got back in the game. Now, though, we know those concussions, especially repeated concussions suffered by many football players, take a horrible toll on the players' brains. They're prone to develop dark, dead splotches throughout the interior of their brains, and the resulting symptoms increase in severity until dementia sets in. And it sets in way earlier in life than it ever should. That condition has a name. It's CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That is the name given to the disease by the man who discovered it, Dr. Bennett Amalu, the Nigerian-American neuropathologist who discovered CTE while performing an autopsy on former Pittsburgh Steelers center Mike Webster in 2002. Tell me about Mike Webster.
Mike Webster was the center for the Steelers on those great football teams that won all those Super Bowls, Terry Bradshaw and those guys, and he was the leader of a talented group. You know, they called the Washington Redskins the Hogs. Those guys at Pittsburgh, they were a wave. They would just wash over you. And Webster at the center position, especially in those days with a guy head up, had head trauma or impact every single play. And as he got away from the game after his Hall of Fame, you saw him starting to lose it a little bit. He finally killed himself destitute in a pickup truck in a field in Pittsburgh, and he was a revered subject.
So Dr. Bennett Amalu does the autopsy 15 years ago on Mike Webster, and what he discovered is CTE. It's taken all that 15 years for Dr. Amalu's discovery to really sink in with the players, with their families, and with organized football, both at the professional and scholastic level. It is those scholastic players that we're going to focus on in this KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour. In just a moment, we'll be joined. Rick will have more, and Rick, of course, is an experienced football play-by-play broadcaster and color commentator for both Union and for TU. And we're going to be joined by the head trainers for the University of Tulsa and for Union High School. But we're going to begin with the medical director of the Oklahoma Stroke and Neurological Institute at Hillcrest Medical Center in Tulsa, Dr. Andre Fredu. Good morning, Dr. Fredu.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining us. Let's kind of lay the groundwork here. What is CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy? What is that?
Well, it is a postmortem diagnosis, which means that the only way you can truly diagnose someone with this condition is through an autopsy and actually taking slices of the brain and seeing the abnormal cells that have developed secondary to repetitive trauma that's occurred to the brain. That's important because if someone's walking around saying, I think I have CTE, again, it's a diagnosis that is found, you know, after an autopsy or during an autopsy.
Well, tell us then, what would a slice of the brain look like in an autopsy of somebody who had CTE?
If people think about Alzheimer's disease or dementia, Alzheimer's dementia, what ends up happening is over a period of time, you have to break down products of certain proteins in the brain, and those proteins will form a nesting or a conglomeration of cells. And what that can ultimately do is it can affect the normal communication pathways of one neuron to another, as well as the blood flow that actually needs to get to the brain. So that's an Alzheimer's that tends to occur in a patient population that tends to be in their late 60s, 70s, 80s. And as you go up with each generation after 60, then the likelihood of developing dementia, and the most well-known is Alzheimer's dementia, goes up probably twofold. What happens in someone who has repetitive brain trauma that has the diagnosis of CTE on post-mortem, if you look at their brain looks very similar to the brain of somebody who has Alzheimer's dementia. You have a lot of the same tangles and tau protein collections, and the brain can otherwise look very normal, but you have these abnormal collections of cells that prevents the normal communication of neurons with one another, as well as the blood flow to those neurons that allows them to function.
Have you looked at the research that ties football-related concussions to CTE? And can you tell us what you think of that research?
Well, I have looked at that research. I've had the honor and privilege of working with several former professional football players that have come to see me, not here in Tulsa, but when I was in Dallas. And you know what you tend to see is you see individuals that just cannot function in a normal fashion for someone that's in their late 20s, early 30s, and early 40s. There's a great deal of difficulty with controlling the mood. Individuals can go from laughter to crying to being essentially completely irrational and angry. So that leads to a lot of difficulties with home life. The memory processes are severely damaged. So they not only have difficulty with recent memory, if you're asking them to remember one or two items, they also have a great deal of difficulty with remembering remote items, like their address, like where they went to high school, who their best friends are. In addition, the idea of multitasking, you know, the things that we do on a daily basis where we're doing two and three things at one time, they lose the ability to do that. They become almost completely one-track minded, and even that one track, they have a great deal of difficulty. So those are the things that I have seen in some of these professional athletes that have had repetitive head trauma.
Are you convinced that it is the concussions that leads to the CTE later in life and those symptoms?
I think that's playing a very, very prominent role. There are other factors that have to come into play also. Some of it is genetic. Someone who is in a, comes from a family lineage where dementia or mental disorders may be present, they may be more prominent and maybe more prevalent in getting CTE. I think nutrition plays a prominent role. For those individuals who do not eat a healthy diet, who are not consuming water and electrolyte solutions that are helping to keep their body in proper pH balance, that plays a role in it. Sleep plays a role in it. And a lot of times these individuals, they sleep very, very poorly because they have excruciating headaches, as well as having their sleep-wake cycle completely damaged because of the location of the sleep-wake cycle. The regulator is in your hypothalamus, which is really at the base of your brain. So those other factors also play a much smaller role, but I do think that the repetitive head trauma is playing the most prominent role in these individuals.
You were telling me you have two sons, 12 years old and 9 years old. Do either of them express an interest in playing football, and how do you feel about them possibly playing?
Well, they do. And as a neurologist, you know, that's a challenge for me. I want my children to be fulfilled in the activities that they're involved in. I think me telling my child that you can't do something, without proper explanation, what it tends to happen is that it gets done anyway. And I think in all children are like that. I have one son who is on an eighth grade football team, and I try to watch him like a hawk. It's important to be involved in those activities. It's important to make sure that they're being properly coached on how to make tackles, on how to use proper leverage. You'll see nowadays that a lot of high schools don't necessarily practice the way that we used to when I played football. A lot of times there's a lot more technique. They're actually tackling soft dummies where there's not a lot of head trauma that goes into that. But it's a challenge for all parents, who have boys. They watch the NFL, they watch college football, they have an interest in playing these sports. I think education is extremely important in making sure that they're getting the proper technique, and also that you have to be actively involved in watching your children. If you see that your child is playing and they've suffered a head injury of some kind, and they look like they may be a little bit woozy, you got to make sure that the coaches know that the individuals that are on the sideline know that, to get them off the field, because the biggest problem with concussions are the repetitive concussions. We've all suffered a concussion. We've fallen out of a treehouse, or we're on a bicycle and flipped over the handlebars. The problem is that with football is the fact that you can have repetitive concussions in one game and multiple times in the same season. So you have to give the brain a chance to rest. You have to give the brain a chance to recover. And with that comes making sure there's proper sleep, making sure that there's minimization of extra stimulation, such as flashing lights and things of that sort, to try to give the brain a chance to reset itself.
Are you getting more and more parents asking you about it, concerned about football and the long-term effects?
Yes, I am. And I think it's valid. It's a very valid point. And some of these parents are parents that are on the same, have children on the same football team that I do. I think it's important that we're properly educated. And I think it's important that our children are educated, and it's important for our children to know that, hey, if you don't feel comfortable, if something has happened, you need to step up. You need to say something to your coach. You need to say something to the athletic trainer who may be on the sideline, because – again, the biggest issue that we run into is the repetitive head trauma, more so than anything else. But there's a sensitivity to NFL and sensitivity to head trauma now that we've never had before. And unfortunately, it's fallen on the backs of these professional athletes and college athletes and some even high school athletes, over the last 10 to 15 years that have had repetitive injuries. And now it's coming to light, the decimation that has occurred in their day-to-day life.
Dr. Perdue, that's probably a good place to leave it. We thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. And listen, God bless, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Dr. Andre Perdue is the medical director of the Oklahoma Stroke and Neurological Institute at Hillcrest Medical Center. You're listening to a KRMG 8 a.m. in-depth hour examining football concussions and the long-term effects. We invite you to take part, especially if you're the parent of a football player. Leave your comment or question via the open mic on the KRMG app.
We tell you the three big things you need to know every 15 minutes, all day. Now, back to the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour on News 102.3 KRMG.
A neurologist letting their children play football is ridiculous. Just tell them, no, I want you to have a long, happy life.
Of course I let my son play high school football. He is good at it and he loves it. I played hockey in high school. You only get one chance to be a kid.
Both of those fathers have compelling points. They really do. Which is right. 8:20, it's a special edition of the KRMG Morning News. 8 a.m. in-depth hour. We're talking about prep football, particularly, and college-level football as well. And concussions and CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, the disease, the malady, the symptom, the syndrome discovered by Dr. Bennett Omalu in 2002 when he was looking at slices of the brain of Mike Webster, the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and saw the black splotches in each of those slices where his brain was essentially dead.
And the thing is, they had done every other kind of test you could do. You know, yeah. They'd looked at everything they could look at, and they could not find any other things that were wrong. Mm-hmm. And believe me, the Steelers team doctor at the time, this guy is no slouch. He knows what he's doing. He's really good at it and went a long way.
There's just no way of diagnosing this until it's postmortem, until you've already died from it. We are joined by a couple of very special guests. Dan Newman is the head trainer at Union High School, and Dave Polansky is the head trainer at TU. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's find out first where both of you stand on concussions and CTE. You both understand, I think, that CTE does happen when a brain is struck repeatedly.
Correct.
Right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. What has changed since 2002 in high school and college football in terms of how you treat concussion, how you recognize it, and just overall attitude toward concussion? Dan, let's start with you.
Oh, it's changed tremendously. Yeah. Even year to year, it's changed. And we were recognizing concussion better. We're handling concussion better, from pulling them out immediately and not letting them return until at least the next day or the day after, controlling when they return to the classroom and how much they perform in the classroom, either it's a half day for a couple days and or just certain classes, technology, a way we not diagnose but handle concussion, whether it's at phone apps or computer-based programs that help us throughout the recovery. It's just better tools for us.
Dave, what about at TU?
Well, all that stuff I concur with. The changes have been great from mid-90s. Mid-90s is when it really started kind of changing. In the last 10 years, everybody thinks they've got a new tool to use. You know, and concussion still is a clinical diagnosis at the end of the day. There's no test. There's not one single test that's going to tell you that they have a concussion. And you've got to group all of your sideline evaluation with their locker room evaluation with what symptoms they're saying they have. All of those things together are going to give you the grand picture.
And KRMG's managing editor Rick Corey is with me.
One of the things that I think is interesting is how the process goes on the sidelines, because we've watched a lot of these, and I have with both of you guys watched a lot of these. Take us through what you do with a player when they come off and either you think or somebody else tells you or they tell you they think they have a problem.
Well, for us, we'll bring them to the sideline. It's usually a quick sideline evaluation. We'll ask them a symptoms, series of symptoms. How are you feeling? You'd still ask them, where are you at? If it's a football game, what quarter are we in? What's the score? If I feel that there's something worse going on, I'll always bring them into the locker room or to the athletic training room and do my further evaluation there, get out all the external stimulus and everything like that so I can get a better, clearer picture of what's going on.
And the concussion, the collisions have gotten a lot harder and a lot faster. So are we really seeing more, Dave?
I don't believe we're seeing more. I think we're recognizing more. People always ask me, how can we have, 15 concussions last year or whatever? And I think it's because we are getting a lot better at recognizing them, and the student athletes are getting a lot better at admitting that they're having problems. And the coaches are, understanding that if a kid is out there and doesn't know what play to run, it doesn't make sense to have him out there because he's not helpful. So all of those things together is the education of the athlete that I'm dealing with now that's 18 years old. He's known nothing else in his life except hearing how bad concussions are.
Dave Polansky, head trainer at TU, and Dan Newman, the head trainer at Union High School. We're talking about concussions and football.
This is a special edition. News 102.3 Tulsa's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic. And the home of the three big things you need to know. Listen on air, online at KRMG.com and on the KRMG app. The KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour starts now.
Good morning, 8:31, 67 degrees in Tulsa. Sunshine 86 for a high this afternoon. We tell you the three big things you need to know every 15 minutes on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter, number three. New this morning, when Corey Peoples failed to show up in court yesterday, a bail bondsman came after him, cornered Peoples in a field near Vera in Washington County. A sheriff's deputy was brought in for backup, and that's when Peoples put a knife to the throat of the woman who was with him. The OSBI says a deputy shot Peoples. The woman's okay. Peoples is alive at a Tulsa hospital facing new charges. Number two, happening today, Obamacare subsidies are over. President Trump immediately putting a stop to the payments of the government made to insurers to help lower copays and deductibles for people with low incomes. And number one, our top story on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter, happening today. It is Football Friday in Oklahoma, and we're going in-depth on high school and college football and CTE, a condition of the brain now tied closely to repeated head trauma and concussions like those seen in football players.
KRMG goes in-depth.
Here's KRMG's Skylar Cooper.
There are many signs of CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, problems with memory, issues in multitasking.
They become almost completely one-track minded, and even that one track, they have a great deal of difficulty.
That's Dr. Andre Fradu, the medical director at Oklahoma Stroke and Neurological Institute at Hillcrest. He tells KRMG the problem is it can only be diagnosed with an autopsy. Factors, he says, include poor nutrition, lack of sleep, even genetics, but he says head trauma, like a concussion from football, is the key factor.
The biggest issue that we run into is the repetitive head trauma.
And that's where the football debate begins. Should you let your kids play football? Dr. Fradu has a son that plays, but he says you have to educate them on the dangers, make sure they're using the right technique, and make sure they and team officials know when it's time to sit down.
Issues that matter to you. Expanded on the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. In-Depth Hour.
Yeah, it is frightening, and we laugh about it sometimes. You know, we all did it wrong back then. We led with our head. We were taught to do that. And so when you start walking around the house and forgetting why you walk down the hallway or whatever, but, you know, a lot of people have that. It's not just related to people with concussions. But, yeah, it is. As you think down the road and with some of the proof and the studies so far leading to dementia and those sort of things, it is scary. And so we want to minimize that risk as best we can.
That is Steve Gage. Remember that name? Steve Gage, native of Claremore, former American football safety, National Football League, Washington Redskins, 1987 and 1988. Of course, played at TU before he was drafted in the sixth round in 1987. Steve Gage, a friend of yours.
He is. He called me a couple of weeks ago because he was concerned about some comments that he made about a targeting penalty. People were making fun of the NFL for targeting, which is that's ridiculous. And Steve is listening now, and he's still very concerned about this. And he wants to point out, too, that it's not a war against football. It's not just that. It's soccer, and it's hockey, and it's anything else that causes that. He's even riding a bicycle without a helmet. But he's a part of a study right now, a brain study in the NFL. And I ask him, is it a little bit concerning? You haven't gotten your results back, and it is. It's the kind of thing that when you've taken that test, even though he feels fine, you worry about what they're going to tell you.
That's Rick Corey. I'm Dan Potter. We're joined by the head trainer at Union High School, Dan Newman, and the head trainer at TU, Dave Polansky, talking about CTE, concussions, football, and all of the above. We had some questions via Facebook about changes to the actual helmets. Mm-hmm. Now, CTE, we heard Dr. Fradu say earlier in the hour, is caused by the brain going back and forth inside the skull when it's hit hard. Is there anything a helmet can do to prevent that?
I don't believe so at all. No matter what we do with the helmet, the brain's still floating in there, and it's going to shake. And no matter what you do to the shell, it's still going to, your momentum, you're running really fast and you stop very quickly.
It's physics. It's an object exactly. In motion tends to stay in motion.
And so, you know, there's a new helmet out that the NFL is using. It costs $1,500. And they say it's going to help. I just don't see that going to be the solution to the problem.
Dan?
Totally agree. I mean, if you can think back to your sixth and seventh grade science where you go up to the teacher goes to the roof and you have to build the apparatus for the egg.
Protect an egg,
The egg, right? So anything you build, you know, you're trying not to break the egg. Well, the helmet was invented to prevent skull fractures. Mm-hmm. And the last time I checked, there hasn't been any skull fractures. But when the egg drops and hits the ground, that yolk is still sloshing around in there and rotating and everything else. So, I mean, I totally agree with Dave. I'm not sold that technology is not there. These companies are developing this stuff and kind of preying on the fears. Now I see the unequal bands for cheerleaders and stuff like that. It doesn't prevent concussion.
I want to ask both of you something, and I know I have seen and heard from coaches before who were frustrated the players can't play, and that makes sense because that's how they make their living, or you know, they want to win games. Have you ever felt pressured to put a player back in? Have you ever felt that?
I'm never pressured. I mean, you get those looks, or you get, you know, the coach questions and everything, but I think it all depends on your relationship, you know, head coach and athletic trainer. And if you have that relationship and they trust you and they trust your judgment, there'll never be that pressure, because it's just on them as much as it is on us to put them back too soon.
Dave?
No, I agree. I mean, the coaches want their players out there. And nowadays, especially the younger coaches that have grown up in this world that we're in now, they understand that they can't do that, because they're the ones that are going to get named in the lawsuits. And, you know, a lot of the stuff we do now is dictated by threat of lawsuits.
Dave, does TU have a rugby team?
We do not. Well, not a collegiate, intercollegiate one. I think there's a club rugby.
Extracurricular team. Kind of one. Do either of you know of any research on this issue with rugby players?
Internationally, the International Rugby Federation is looking into it. I think they're one of the slower groups to adopt some changes. And they're getting some criticism on how they've done it.
You think American football is a macho sport.
That's a little
rugby in Europe is, that's, I mean, that is, they're, I can see them being resistant to that.
Other than football, because that's the one we think of as a collision sport, and it is, what are your other higher instances of head injuries?
We're seeing it a lot in soccer. Women's soccer has huge injury rates with concussion. Cheerleading, especially competitive cheerleading, like at Union, it's not uncommon. Even our POM team, I've had a couple girls kick themselves in the head hard enough to where it snaps their neck back.
Wow.
So it's not a sport specific injury.
Right. I've seen concussions in marching band too.
Oh, yeah.
The difference though is football, and as we heard the doctor say in the first half hour, you can get multiple concussions in one game, and repeat head trauma in, say, pom-pom, probably not going to be the case.
Right. It's the usually what they talk about there is the subconcussive blows or the sub-impact blows, that you just keep getting that repetitive trauma that may not elicit any symptoms, but it's still that day-to-day repetitive trauma.
You know, that makes sense with soccer then, right? Because that repeated hit to the head.
Right. Repeated hits. And we're doing a study now at TU with subconcussive blows to try to figure out, does, if we track somebody over the season and we see them getting a certain number of hits to the head, you know, when they finally get a concussion, if they finally get a concussion, and everybody looks at the film and said, they never really got hit hard. Yeah, well, look over the past week. We've got record that they've been hit 30 times in practice, where other players at that position's only been hit 10 times. Okay. Well, that person is either using wrong technique or they're just putting themselves in harm's way. And so we've used it, and that's where I hope we can use it to educate kids and show them, look, you're doing things that other guys that are successful are not doing, and teach them how to hit right.
We're going
to
hear more from former Washington Redskins Steve Gage in just a moment, and we'll ask both of these guys, if they had sons, would they let them play?
We tell you the three big things you need to know every 15 minutes, all day. Now, back to the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. In-Depth Hour on News 102.3 KRMG.
8:46, Steve Gage is a former pro football player, played for the Washington Redskins 1987 and 88, drafted out of TU in 1987. We ask him about concussions and what he, as a former NFL player, would like to see done in the coming years.
We're pushing for obviously rule changes, but also the continued study of the brain and the impact of that, and pushing for more neurological study of it. And we've all been recently going through some testing and various things that was part of the concussion settlement. We don't all as former players don't all agree to the way it's formatted, but at least it's a start headed in the right direction to study the impact of concussions, and then, you know, what causes CTE and how concussions can relate to all that. So what we can do is push for more rule change and not ruin the game, but make it a safer game. You know, I love football. It's a great teacher of life lessons and all that. And I am a proponent of kids starting at a young age in elementary and middle school if they're coached to tackle properly, to run with football in the right way, not leading with their helmet. The way I was taught back in the 80s, we didn't know the repercussions of it down the road, but we do today. So we're held responsible. So I think former NFL players, we got to push at our local levels to make sure the coaches and make sure the colleges maybe that we're a part of are teaching those things, but we've got to continue to look for rule changes that make sense.
Steve Gage telling us it's scary for him. He feels some symptoms. He's better now, but it's scary looking down the road. He doesn't know what's going to happen.
He told me he's been fairly symptom-free, but anytime you take that test, you worry about what they're going to tell you when it comes back. And as you said, CTE is not something you can diagnose until it's time for an autopsy.
We're joined for this 8 a.m. in-depth hour by Dan Newman, head trainer at Union High School, and Dave Polansky, the head trainer at the University of Tulsa. We invite you to join us via open mic on the KRMG app or watch Facebook Live right now at KRMG Tulsa. Guys, you both have daughters. Both of you have two daughters, so you don't have to make this choice. But if you did, I'm going to put you on the spot. Would you let your sons or son play?
For me, if they wanted to play football, it would probably be till the 7th or 8th grade. Flag football would be fine for me, 7-on-7, but not tackle until the 7th or 8th grade. And I look at it, I agree with some of those comments Steve made. If you want to start them early, you know, proper technique and everything, but we also have to look at it, that constant repetitive head trauma. So think about the kids that start tackle football in the second grade, and let's say they make the NFL.
I'm sorry, there is I was not aware. Yes. At second grade, there's tackle
second
football?
Second grade, and now they're tackling from the second grade to maybe a five-year career to the NFL. So think, and if they're maybe they're an offensive lineman. So now there's all those years of just constant bang, bang, bang. So, I mean, 7th or 8th grade, if
Dave,
any.
Dave?
I agree. If I had to make that call, I would try to encourage my son to play something, soccer, some other sport, lacrosse, something that's athletic, so you can learn the skills of being an athlete, that transition to doing football. I think Steve Gage made a good point that, well, if you're going to start him young, you got to have good coaches. The problem is there's not enough good coaches to teach youth sports how to do that one critical thing well. And it's too important to teach well. And I'm not trying to insult the coaches that are out there. They volunteer their time. And they do a good job. I'm sure most of them do. But it's just such a hard thing to teach. And, you know, you got kids in second grade that they start practice before we do in August. And they're practicing 2-3 days a week throughout, you know, middle or elementary school and junior high. And they have contact every day in practice. We don't have contact every day in practice, you know, and all of those micro traumas to the head over the course of 15 years is going to add up. So I think that would be my thing. I wouldn't let him do it.
Okay. Just a couple of minutes left. Got to talk about the NFL for just a second. Do you see the last 15 years ramping up to a major change in the NFL, the way the game's played?
I mean, we're already seeing those changes with targeting penalties, things like that. Medical spotters in the booth and recognizing that. I love the sport of football, and I hope it never goes away. And the NFL is going to have to save the sport. It'll get better, but the guys there are bigger, stronger, faster, and you'll never take concussion out of the game. But how we recognize it and treat it, that's where we're going to make big progress.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, the NFL has done is starting to do a better job. You know, they had a rheumatologist that was in charge of their head and neck issues 15 years ago. That has finally changed. They're starting to admit that there is an issue in the studying they're doing and all that. You know, I think all of those things are good changes. Targeting penalty, I think I'd like to see, you know, the NFL have the ejection if it was, you know, right then rather than just a fine the next day and suspending later. You know, I think that can be a good change. There's some other rule changes that, you know, I've heard some different things about trying to take kickoff out of the game because kickoff cover is one of the highest rates of concussion. So you have to figure out a way to do that differently. You know, and I don't know, I've heard a couple of different things that sound interesting. So I think they're going to find a way to save the game because it's a great game. It teaches so many valuable things. I played in high school and junior high. It's a great sport. It's phenomenal. But you've got to make sure that our kids are safe.
The last thing you were telling us a story about. I asked you guys some funny things players have said to you. What happened to you on the sideline once?
Well, a kid had a concussion, and I had his helmet, and so I was holding his helmet, and he asked the police officer on the sideline to arrest me
because you had taken his helmet.
Yeah, so you know we do things to keep them safe, so they don't sneak back into the game.
In 15 seconds, how's Kevion Cooper?
Doing really well. He's still got a long road ahead of him. He made a not a miraculous, but a great recovery up to this point, doing rehab every day.
Do we know, was it a concussion?
It was a traumatic brain injury. Okay. So concussions are traumatic, yes. Brain injury, yes. But this was considered a traumatic brain injury.
Okay.
And Dan was key in being there for him that moment.
Yeah. Will we see Kevion back this season, do you think?
Not playing, no. He's, you know, working towards just, you know, getting back to a normal everyday life. So,
guys, thanks for being here.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Dan Newman's a head trainer at Union High School. Dave Polansky, head trainer at the University of Tulsa.